one of the hallmarks of the last days, as it's spoken about in the New Covenant, is that people will be without natural affection. We certainly see that in terms of our families of the day. We prayed for a rather horrid incident of a man involved in it before the service. And we see more and more of that, of people who are turning against parents, who are turning against siblings, that things are coming awry in families. But yet, that is not God's ideal, that is not God's plan. Turn with me to Psalms, Book of Psalms, chapter 133. Book of Psalms, 133. A whopping big three verses. A song of ascent of David. Behold how good and how pleasant it is for brothers to dwell together in unity. It is like the precious oil upon the head coming down upon the beard, even Aaron's beard coming down upon the edge of his robes. It is like the dew of Hermon coming down from the mountains of Zion, for there the Lord commanded the blessing, life forever. That's the ideal, that's what God desires, that brothers live together in unity. But we have been studying in Genesis two brothers who definitely were not united. That was Esau and Jacob. And now Jacob, in our last section we studied, was on his way back to face Esau. And the question is, would they live together in unity? And what would that take in order for them to be joined back together as brothers, as part of the family? Turn back with me to Genesis chapter 33, which is our text for this morning. This was after the night where Jacob wrestled with God, a night when he wrestled not only God, but also had his fears of what was going to happen to his family, to all the possessions which God had given to him, that he had obeyed God and gone back to the land which God had promised, and he had no idea how it was going to work out. So in Genesis chapter 33, starting verse 1, then Jacob lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, Esau was coming and 400 men with him. So he divided the children among Leah and Rachel and the two maids. He put the maids and their children in front, and Leah and her children next, and Rachel and Joseph last. And if you just read that far, you'd think, yeah, right, what a guy. He's putting the women and their children first, and he's putting his least loved children and wife first, or mistress first, and then finally the one that he really loved, the wife, Rachel. Then verse 3 teaches us what kind of a man Jacob was, but he himself passed on ahead of them and bowed down to the ground 7 times till he came near to his brother. So Jacob went out in front. He was not hiding behind his family. He was not hiding behind his people. He walked out to the very front of the line to meet with Esau. This is a very courageous thing to do. It is the courage of being in God's will, of doing what God had commanded us to do. It is that strength of character to do what is right, no matter how scared you are. And also notice that he bowed down to the ground 7 times. You would think, reading earlier in Genesis, the circumstances with which Jacob had left, that Jacob really had a case to make with his brother, that his brother had sold him the birthright, and his father, although tricked into it, did indeed give Jacob the blessing. And the blessing was that Jacob would rule over Esau and not vice versa. So you would have thought that when Jacob came back in, he would have been coming back with a different attitude. But maybe if Jacob had indeed come back after only a couple of days, as he originally intended, from Haran. That would have been his attitude. But God had had a lot of work to do and had done in the life of Jacob. So when Jacob was on his way back, I think he understood how slimy the deed that he did in order to get all these things off of his brother. So he came back asking his brother's forgiveness with bowing and humility to his brother. He did whatever it took to get reconciliation back with his brother. I mean, we would be tempted, I would think, that if Esau had 400 men, to turn around and go somewhere we could get 500 men. And then we'd come back and we'd have some force behind us. Of course, if we did that, then Esau would get 600 men, and then we'd get 800 men. And, well, you get the idea. That it would have been a grand old battle. But instead, Jacob humbled himself before his brother. He did what it took to reconcile with his brother. Verse 4, then Esau ran to meet him and embraced him and fell on his neck and kissed him, and they wept. He lifted his eyes and saw the women and the children and said, "Who are these with you?" So he said, "The children whom God has graciously given your servant." How many times has that been our attitude? Somebody looks at us and says, "Oh, nice car." Do we say, "Well, that's the car that God has graciously given to his servant"? Or do we say, "Well, yeah," and then we pop open the hood and we're pointing out stuff and we're talking about the engine, we're talking about the tires, and no. The stuff that God has graciously given to us. I think Jacob caught it, that these were not his possessions to lose, but rather these were the things that God had given to him. And if God wanted to take it away, so be it. And the maids came near with their children, they bowed down. Leah likewise came near with her children, and they bowed down. And afterward, Joseph came near with Rachel, and they bowed down. And he said, "What do you mean by all this company which I have met?" And he said, "To find favor in the sight of my Lord." In other words, all the presents that he gave to Esau. But Esau said, "I have plenty, my brother. Let what you have be your own." Jacob said, "No, please, if now I have found favor in your sight, then take my present from my hand. For I see your face as one sees the face of God, and you have received me favorably. Please take my gift which has been brought to you, because God has dealt graciously with me," there it is again, "and because I have plenty." Thus he urged him, and he took it. So there was no sign of greed in Jacob. You might be tempted that, "Oh, okay, brother's fine with this. All right, give me the stuff back." No, he said, "No, take it, please take it. I have enough, take it." Verse 12, and Esau said, "Let us take our journey and go, and I will go before you." But he said to him, "My Lord knows that the children are frail and that the flocks and herds which are nursing are a care to me. And if they are driven hard, one day all the flocks will die. Please let my Lord pass on before his servant, and I will proceed at my leisure according to the pace of the cattle that are before me, and according to the pace of the children, and I will come to my Lord at Seir." Esau said, "Please let me leave with you some of the people who are with me." But he said, "What need is there? Let me find favor in the sight of my Lord." So in other words, Jacob had gotten this far with God's protection. Why did he need Esau's protection all of a sudden? God had gotten him this far. God was going to keep him protected. So Esau returned that day on his way to Seir. Jacob journeyed to Sukkot and built for himself a house and made booths for his livestock. Therefore the place is named Sukkot. Sukkot is booths or tabernacles or tents, and that's what he made, so that's what it's called. Now Jacob came safely to the city of Shechem, which is in the land of Canaan, when he came from Padam Aram and camped before the city. He bought the piece of land where he pitched his tent from the hand of the sons of Hamor, Shechem's father, for 100 pieces of money. And he erected there an altar and called it El Elohei Israel, God the God of Israel. It's sort of interesting that Abraham bought a field to bury his family in, but this is the first recorded instance of the patriarchs actually buying a piece of land to settle down in the land of Canaan, which was to become Israel. So we see this transition. This is also the last time, Jacob was also the last time that any mention is made of the family back in Haran. You don't really hear anything more of them, because they are building their own future there in the land of Canaan, the land of Israel. And really here, Jacob built this altar because God brought him, God did exactly what God had promised, and Jacob had asked of him, to bring him safely back to the house of his father. And here he was. He'd come back in peace to the land of his father, to the city of his father. I guess what I wanted to concentrate on in this section is this idea of reconciliation, the joy of reconciliation, and what Jacob had gone through in order to reconcile with his brother. It cost him some of his pride, and cost him some of his possessions in order to make peace with his brother, but they were things that he willingly offered to his brother, and they're things that we are least likely to think to give up. But yet God commands us to do whatever it takes. Turn me to the book of Matthew, chapter 5. Matthew, chapter 5. And by the way, we in the New Covenant take this idea of brothers far further than just our biological brothers or our family relationships. I brought up that bit about how badly things are going in families nowadays, because if people are not even being kind to their own brothers, how in the world are they treating people not of their household? And the answer is very, very badly. People are digging in their heels. It's just not very good. Okay, so Matthew chapter 5, down in verse 21. You have heard that the ancients were told, you shall not commit murder, and whoever commits murder shall be liable to the court. But I say to you that everyone who is angry with his brother shall be guilty before the court. Whoever says to his brother, you good for nothing, shall be guilty before the Supreme Court. And whoever says, you fool, shall be guilty enough to go into the fiery hell. Therefore, if you are presenting your offering at the altar, and there remember that your brother has something against you, leave your offering there before the altar and go. First be reconciled to your brother, and then come and present your offering. Make friends quickly with your opponent at law while you are with him on the way, so that your opponent may not hand you over to the judge, and the judge to the officer, and you be thrown into prison. Truly I say to you, you will not come out of there until you have paid up the last cent. The priority of reconciliation here, that God does not want to have any loose ends between people. In our day, I've heard this used before, lay your gift before the altar, as something as walking into a church. But this was a little bit deeper than that. When you brought your gift to the altar, you took it from your home to Jerusalem. You might have been in the furthest reaches of Galilee, and you loaded up your animal, and you took it all the way to the temple. A journey of several days on foot. You get into the temple. You got your animal. You're ready to hand it to the priest. And, oh, I forgot about Moshe has a problem with me. I called him a whatever. Now he's angry with me, and I never made it right. I never said I'm sorry. So, you leave your animal there and said, take care of my lamb. And you turn around and back up to Galilee. Another few days. Talk to the guy who has a problem with you. And the implication here is he has a problem with you because of something that you did that wronged him. And there are some people who just plain don't like us. And just as individuals. There's some people that we rub the wrong way. There are people who basically just have a problem with our personality or whatever. Not talking about that, but somebody that you have wronged, you have treated wrong, especially somebody that you have done the things that Yeshua has just mentioned. You let the fight get dirty, attack somebody's person, you insulted them, you tore them down instead of building them up. Yeshua says reconciliation takes priority even over worship. That you don't use worship as a band-aid to slap over something that you've done that needs to be made right. You go and make it right. Then you go worship. That sort of gives a new slant on what we are to do. Then we look at what Jacob did, all the steps he did, that he humbled himself and did whatever it took with his brother to reconcile. We think to ourselves, wow, I'm glad we don't have to do that. Well, maybe we do. Pride can get in our way. When somebody assaults us or impugns our integrity, the human instinct, particularly for men, but some for women too, is to dig in your heels and to raise your fist and get ready to let them have it back. Like I said, the first inclination when somebody comes up against you with 400 men is to get 500 men together. They add 100 men to get to 600. You add another 100, you get to 700. And you're going to have a rumble. You see that all the time in the corporate world. There are rumbles and there are food fights and there are fist fights and there are altercations and all sorts of things. All done very politely, of course, in the corporate world. All done very above board and with polite language. But it's still just as bad as slapping each other around in a mud pit. That's not the way believers are supposed to live. They're supposed to reconcile, even with the people at work, even with the people next door that you had a running feud with for the last decade or so, over a clothesline pole or a fence or dog droppings or whatever. Yes, them too. Whether you think you've been wronged or not, or you think you have rights or no rights, reconcile with them. Leave your gift upon the altar. Reconcile with them. Well, certainly there ought to be boundaries. I mean, if you've been wronged, then you have every right to be angry, to fight back, right? Turn to Romans chapter 12. Down in verse 14. Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Surely, there must be a mistake there. That must be a copyist error, right? Somebody must have turned that around. Surely that not shouldn't belong there. Somebody's giving you grief. The American way is to give them bigger grief. Right back. Back at you, guy. That's not God's way. So if somebody gives you grief, especially with regard to your Christian walk or your life in God, but it's broader than that. It's broader than that. That was verse 14. Romans 12, verse 14.
Thank you.
Bless those who persecute you. Bless and do not curse. Man, is that hard. Is that so hard? I just had an incident this last week I was telling some people about before services where I got into an email frame war with somebody at work and I just had to stop and God kind of tapped me on the shoulder and said, "What are you doing?" It's one of those things where you know, you walk in a room and a child's preparing to do something that you know is going to be a disaster and the parent's first word is, "What are you doing? What are you doing?" And we have to always bear in mind, everywhere we are, no matter what we're doing, whether it's family or neighbors or work or people on the street, that our reaction to being treated badly is not to go treat the other person even worse. I mean, after this email flame war, I had to be very, very careful because, of course, all these thoughts of revenge come through your mind. Yeah, in the corporate world, you're starting to bring your equivalent of the 500 men. Well, I know this dirt about this person that I could bring out and I could cause trouble and all that. No. Stop. Time out. Out of the game. Go sit on the bench for a while and think about this one. Bless those who persecute you. The person I had the flame war with is going to be back in the office on Monday, and hopefully that God will continue to give me the strength to react properly. It'll probably freak this person out if they come up back expecting a battle and it says, "Hi, how you doing? How was your week off? You know, did you enjoy it?" I'm sure they're going to think that I have some ulterior motive, but I hope God will give me the wisdom that I don't. that there's no agenda, that it's honest, that it's true. Bless those who persecute you. If you do that, reconciliation's easy, isn't it? Because the break really doesn't happen in the first place. Because somebody comes up against you and does everything wrong and messes with you, as we'd say, causes you all kinds of grief. If while they're doing that, you're blessing them, well, they may go away angry, but you haven't gone away angry. So really, there's no real break. There's no need to reconcile because that other person is going to go away and calm down. And there's not going to be that break there. Verse 15, rejoice with those who rejoice and weep with those who weep. Be of the same mind toward one another. Do not be haughty in mind, but associate with the lowly. Do not be wise in your own estimation. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Respect what is right in the sight of all men. In other words, just fellowship with people. Divisions can occur because somebody's done something to you. And divisions can occur because of pride. This whole idea about rejoicing with those who rejoice and not be haughty but associate with the lowly. Pride can cause big problems. Big problems. That's what causes us to dig in those heels and to say, I am not going to reconcile. It is a great testimony to God's work in Jacob that Jacob didn't do that. Jacob didn't say, well, I've just spent 20 crummy years of my life over herding sheep where I should have been leading the family because of this nasty brother of mine and his anger problem. He didn't do that. Jacob didn't do that. Jacob admitted, I'm sure in his heart, this is my fault. I did this. I need to do whatever it takes to reconcile with my brother because the path of obedience leads through my brother's territory. God does that, doesn't he? Oftentimes. I'm always conscious of that. I guess I'm getting old enough and smart enough. I don't remember what the proverb is. It's a proverb from some country that says too soon old and too late smart. But I'm finally getting smart enough to realize that not only is there a rationale behind this as far as God's concerned, but there's a practical reason behind this because too many times, sort of like the cartoon where you're going to a job interview and you're in a hurry so you have a fender bender on the way there. It didn't happen to me, but it could have in my life, but you have a fender bender on the way there, and you have a violent argument, you know, a loud argument with the person as to whose fault it was, and you both go your way and find out that's the guy who's interviewing you. Okay? Those sort of things happen all the time in life. So there's practical reasons to just not paying back evil, evil, and not be proud. There's times, too, when you know you have no idea. I've gotten a great deal of wisdom from people who the world considers to be very lowly in status, but yet you get a lot of wisdom from them, and I've gotten a lot of narishkeit, a lot of foolishness from people who the world considers to be very, very successful and very bright and very well-to-do. Do not be haughty in mind. Don't be proud. Don't be wise in your own estimation. Humble yourself. Maybe you're wrong in the conflict. Maybe you're the one who's wrong. Maybe you need to hear the other person's side of things. Never pay back evil for evil to anyone. Never is a strong word, isn't it? God uses it. And when we use it, God often points us on the shoulder and said, never say never. But God can say never because He's eternal. He knows what never really means. He says, never pay back evil. It's never acceptable. Never acceptable. Never have a, I'm going to do to him worse than he did to me kind of things. That's not God's will. That's not God's plan. Bless and do not curse. Reconcile. Verse 18, if possible, so far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. God is very, very careful there to say that because there are people in this world that you will not be able to be at peace with, either because, like I said, they just don't like you, which is okay. Or it could be that they have a problem with God and as a representative of God in your workplace and your neighborhood, they then have a problem with you. I mean, I've had things happen like that. Even in the congregation, there are people that drift away from God, and as a result, they cause all kinds of fights with me. And it's very, very plain that that's where their problem is, because then they leave here and they don't go into another congregation. They just kind of get angry with God for, stay angry with God for a while. But as far as it depends on you, be at peace with all men. Don't start the fight. Don't continue the fight. Don't prolong the fight. Don't feed the fight. Reconciliation. Be at peace with all men. Verse 19, never take your own revenge, beloved, but leave room for the wrath of God, for it is written, vengeance is mine, I will repay, says the Lord. But if your enemy is hungry, feed him, and if he is thirsty, give him a drink, for in so doing, you'll heap burning coals on his head. Do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. Not with strength, not with wisdom even, not with power, but with good. Overcome evil with good. That it should be such an outstanding testimony there that even people that are our mortal enemies should see it and understand that what they're seeing is something that's good. And doing good to people oftentimes would just diffuse the argument. Just diffuse the argument. You know, I can remember times when I've had this feud with somebody at work. And there have been several. There have been several, to my shame. There have been times when I've really gotten into feuds with people. And usually it's just taking God slapping me around a little bit and saying, what are you doing? And if I would turn around and start doing good to the one whom I'm feuding with, strangely enough, the feud tends to end pretty quickly. I mean, in a lot of those cases, I wouldn't call those people to have become best buddies, but we got along. We got along after that. But if you feed the conflict and don't reconcile, the conflict never ends. The conflict just never ends. I mean, think of what would have happened if Jacob had brought 500 men and gone up against Esau and Esau against Jacob and all the rest. It would have been a life of constant turmoil and conflict instead of reconciling with his brother. And what joy that brought to both of them, that this great feud was over, that Jacob went away to Haran because he was afraid for his life. His brother said, I'm going to kill you. And he meant it. You know, sometimes nowadays people get angry and say, I'm going to kill you. Most of the times they're joking. Esau wasn't joking. Big, strong, burly hunter Esau was going to kill Jacob. And now they're hugging each other. The joy of reconciliation. Absolutely amazing. When we bother to do it, when we bother to obey God and do things God's way, to not repay evil with evil, to do whatever it takes to reconcile, even leaving our gift at the altar, doing whatever it takes. The priority is reconciliation. It's not reconciliation versus worship. Reconciliation is part of worship. It is part of obeying God. It is part of tying up those loose ends. Having that relationship with other people that we need to have. Never take your own revenge. Never pay back evil for evil. Always put a priority on reconciliation. Even if it means, as we would say, eating crow, and even if it costs you something in terms of your possessions, do it. Because reconciliation is more important than your pride, than your possessions. It's more important than even worship. Reconcile with those whom you have offended. Reconcile with those whom you've caused trouble with. Let's pray. Dear God and Father, forgive us for times that we have prolonged the conflict, that we have dug in our heels, and that we have built our own fortresses of straw and gone up against other people rather than obeying you, rather than blessing those who cause us trouble. rather than letting you take the vengeance. Father, forgive us for being poor testimonies to you and our families and our workplaces by being warmongers instead of peacemakers. Open up our eyes and give us wisdom that we might see those places where we need to change, that we need to handle situations differently. Give us the strength to murder our pride and instead to rejoice in your Spirit, to humble ourselves and to obey you, so that our Messiah, Yeshua, might be glorified. Amen.